Welcome to episode 22 of the Walk and Talk podcast. I'm Greg Johnson, and today is Sunday, May 24th, 2020. The topic for this podcast is going to be vegetarianism and the factors that are influencing the discussion right now about vegetarianism versus meat eating, and then different levels of vegetarianism, such as, you know, veganism or people who eat fish but not red meat, etc. So let's first talk about an overview of the factors that are influencing the discussion about vegetarianism. In 2019, there were a few influencing factors. One was the rise of concern or the increased discussion about global warming, and there is often a comparison between global warming and the influence of factory farming, overutilization of land, shortages of water, and water is a very high demand resource for agriculture, particularly for livestock in these factory farms. So there's a concern about the environmental impact and land usage impact of farming various kinds of animals for meat consumption, and a concern about how that industry impacts global warming and the environment. There has also been a market change. Vegetarian products have been around for decades, and there have been meat imitations available. Probably one of the more popular and well-known brands is Morningstar. They have these breakfast sausages and links that are similar in appearance and texture and flavor, perhaps, to their meat counterparts. And if a company is looking for a product to replace with a plant-based option, certainly breakfast foods would be a place to start, because that's when some people will have their primary first meal of the day with some sort of meat base to it. And the Morningstar products have been pretty popular, but probably the initial wow factor has dissipated a little bit. I remember the Morningstar products from 20, 30 years ago, and they were kind of an interesting novelty back then. But last year, increasingly in the news and social media, there were reports of a new surge in meat alternatives. And specifically, products like the Impossible Burger or Beyond Burger, these were designed to really, as closely as possible, mimic meat products so that they would smell like meat, they would look like meat, they would have the texture of meat, there would be gristle. When you're cooking them in the pan, there would be that sort of greasy, crispy fat and whatever, you know, that shows up when you're cooking a hamburger or whatever. So that was the goal of these companies, above and beyond just having some product that sort of looks like meat and tastes okay. They really wanted to completely mimic meat. Now, there's certainly, for people that are meat eaters, there are probably hundreds of different meat products and different cuts of meat, and whether it's smoked or, you know, dried, or how it's cured, how it's cooked, so many variations that while it seems like an amazing feat to create a product that some meat eaters say they can't distinguish from the real thing, that's only one product. And there are, you know, hundreds more to go if some company wants to replace meat products with plant-based products. But it's certainly a good place to start. Breakfast meats, that's probably the first item to try to replicate, especially from a business model. You want to pick some food that's going to be common. But then the second kind of most popular and recognizable meat product would be beef, ground beef patties for a hamburger. And so that's what these companies have done. They use beet juice and other plant-based ingredients to make it look like it's a meat item. So anyway, it's been then in people's mind, and for a new generation of people, that the Morningstar products just have kind of, become less, as I say, less of a news item. But the Morningstar has had these artificial chicken patties and artificial sausage items for decades, as I said. One of the initial forces behind people shifting to products like the Morningstar products had been a report back lab work from their annual doctor's visit, and it would reveal that their cholesterol was really high. So they would end up being told by their doctor that they needed to cut back on red meat, cut back on fatty meats, cut back on eggs. And so you have people who, not always, but I guess the typical sort of stereotype is that it would be a man who's overweight and who really likes to eat his meat. And this is often a theme then that comes up in movies even, you know, that the wife would be telling the husband, the dad of the family or whatever, oh, you can't have meat. And then, you know, he'd try to be sneaking meat or whatever. So this is then what's been driving this trend toward offering some meat alternatives for people that for health reasons need to make a different food choices. But with the news of global warming and the mindfulness of, you know, the impact of food, farming, agriculture that's animal-based foods, there's a renewed interest in shifting to alternate foods. Okay. So those are two factors. And then this year, with that backdrop and with that context being pretty fresh from last year, this year in 2020, starting in sort of February or particularly March, there was a global awareness of the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic and its impact on people's lives, and the desire to find out, where did this come from? And so, with a bit of research that was done by doctors and scientists and government agencies and the Chinese government, it was determined that the COVID-19 coronavirus had its roots in what are called wet markets, where just like probably a regular outdoor market, people go to buy meats. There's a popular, they're not just one popular one, but quite a few popular fish markets where people will go, they'll buy fresh fish, and things are just kind of, food is out in the open. But some of these wet markets, in addition to having fish and chicken and already butchered meats, would have live animals, people that want, I guess, fresh meat. They don't want it like freshly packaged. They want to buy the animal and they're going to kill the animal themselves. So these wet markets offer that ability to go just buy animals. And that can get a little bit unclean, because it's like in a kitchen, in a restaurant, you wouldn't expect to have chickens running around or something, you know. So in a food vending venue, one would hope that there'd be some measure of cleanliness and hygiene. And that's the concern, is that where there might be lots of different kinds of animals, some slaughtered, some not, flies, you know, buzzing around, etc., there begins to be a concern about cleanliness. And there's this potential for a virus to jump from an animal to a human in that environment. And so these wet markets then raised that awareness, and people began to then question, should we even be eating meat if there are these risks of diseases traveling, jumping from animal hosts to humans and having a big, profound impact on humans, where they didn't affect the animals that much because the animals had the antibodies to fight it off. Now, vegetarians would understandably want to leverage this global pandemic as sort of this opportunity to advocate for more vegetarianism and to say, hey, look, this is, you know, harmful to the animals. It's potentially harmful to humans. However it's done, whether it's a wet market or traditional meat processing that we'd be familiar with in the United States, there are still these risks of having disease. And to combat the risk of disease, there are lots of antibiotics that are used. So it's just a potentially problematic situation. And that argument in itself, you hear that and you think, boy, that's a really good point. So all these antibiotics and diseases, and maybe we should just eat vegetables. Then there wouldn't be any diseases. But we know that there have also been, you know, recalls of spinach or other foods that are vegetable foods that can make people sick. If we're concerned about our food choices and food sources and the cleanliness and safety of foods, we can't just say that meat is the only unsafe product. So I think while it's probably worth discussing a bit, I don't think it's fair to just kind of point to the coronavirus pandemic as a reason why everybody should suddenly become vegetarian. And if we take a step back a little bit, there are certainly approaches to farming where cows or chickens or pigs or whatever are just kind of running around outdoors. So open range, grass fed, and these approaches to farming are having a renewing effect on the land, so that areas that had become sort of arid and unusable are starting to be used by these farmers or who are using regenerative farming practices. So where we would say, on the one hand, that farming and agriculture that's focused on the production of meat-based foods has a negative impact on the environment, there are these examples out there on YouTube of proper farming practices actually bringing back the environment. So we can't really use that argument. And I think it's important when trying to advance a cause, when trying to make a point, that one doesn't rely on these easily countered points, that such as the ones I'm suggesting. So basically that if one's going to advocate for vegetarianism, there need to be several good reasons and not ones that are easily argued. Okay, so we've ruled out the idea of meats being unsafe, somehow more unsafe than vegetables. There may be some truth there, but it's not universally 100% true that all meat is harmful and all plants are 100% safe. Okay, then the next point about the environment, there are practices that can be used that would benefit the environment. Now, some of that assumes that we don't continue to overpopulate the planet to the point that the only way to produce enough meat is to have factory farms. a declining population would put less demand on animal-based meat agriculture industries and would allow for more free-range and grass-fed happy cows, happy at least until they're killed. But, you know, at least that's better probably than putting lots of animals in little cages. And so the next point then is, with regard to health, there has been this choice between eating meat or going vegetarian. And, you know, really, neither of those choices are ideal for everybody. Well, let's go back to what I was just talking about regarding these imitation meats. Something we really need to wonder about is the question of who is going to eat these imitation meat products, because certainly meat eaters who have no qualms about eating meat, they're not going to want an imitation product that in some cases would cost more than the real thing. And if they are somebody who's a real meat connoisseur and interested in all the different cuts of meat that you can get, and they go to their meat locker and they get their side of beef or whatever and put it in their freezer, and that's sort of a ritual for them, and they have all these different cuts of meat, they're not going to replace all that with just some burger. And if you consider vegetarians who will find the idea of eating meat sort of disgusting, sort of like the way even a meat eater might react to the idea of eating squid or eating a snake or eating a frog or a bat or some animal that somebody might be disgusted at the idea of eating that. Well, that's how a vegetarian may very likely feel about eating a cow or eating a pig or eating a chicken. They may have that same level of disgust. So they're not out looking in the market for some product that's going to, as closely as possible, recreate that experience of eating an animal. They're not going to be buying that. So how can there even be these products on the market? Who's going to eat them? Well, take a look at the nutrition panel on the Beyond Burger package, and I think there is revealed the answer. The Beyond Burger has, I think it's 20 grams of protein, and usually if you're getting 20 grams of protein from something, beans or rice or nuts or meat or whatever, there's some other things coming with that 20 grams of protein. First, you're going to be getting probably 15 or 20 grams of carbs, and you're going to get a lot of cholesterol if you're getting your protein from meat. Or if you're going with a traditional sort of veggie patty, those usually have a lot of rice and beans in them. Not always, but mostly. And so you're either getting cholesterol and carbs, or you're getting a lot of carbs. But some people can't really be consuming large quantities of carbs if they're trying to keep their carb intake on the low side, maybe to keep their glucose blood sugar levels down or for whatever other reason. Well, this Beyond Burger has, like, I think I'm remembering correctly, it's like 5 or 6 grams of carbs, 20 grams of protein, and when you eat this, if you have one of those patties, or particularly if you have two, if you're a big person and you have two of those patties, you're going to be full for a while. It's not like eating a bag of potato chips. I mean, you're going to feel like you've eaten a steak, but you're not going to get the cholesterol. You're not going to get the carbs. So what is being provided by these imitation meat products is an incredible source of protein. So that's why I think that even for the people that might generally have a hard time with the idea of eating something that's like meat, and for the meat eaters who might prefer a real meat product, there is nothing out there that has this nutritional value that the Beyond Burger and other products have. And the, for example, the Morningstar breakfast patties, those have 9 grams of protein and 3 grams of carbs. So you have 2 or 3, let's say you're up to 27 grams of protein from 3 of those patties and 9 grams of carbs. Still very impressive. And for whatever reason, these imitation meat products tend to have, at least some of them have, this high protein, low carb. And it's really, I think, pretty amazing and really helpful, because if you know somebody who's a vegetarian, or if you are a vegetarian and you're honest about what you eat, Pepsi is vegetarian, Doritos are vegetarian, or even if you get organic, fair trade, artisan, bespoke, whatever woke kind of product, it probably has some carbs in there and lots of calories and not as much nutrition. So anyway, these are the 3 factors, and that's basically then the impact of environmental concerns that are on the rise, the impact of the industry introducing these imitation products, the impact of COVID concerns, and the concern about meat as a food source, and then finally just sort of raised awareness about health and trying to keep one's immune system up. So there's more thinking about health these days. But it is a time when vegetarianism, and particularly these products that are being introduced, I think have an opportunity to really kind of take off. So that is a bit about the context that's influencing the present day thinking and discussion of and about vegetarianism. So I want to shift gears a little bit, and I'm just going to read through a list of reasons why people become vegetarian. And this is not to persuade anybody, it's just to describe the landscape, which is pretty diverse. The landscape of all the different people who might be choosing vegetarianism for very different reasons. Health is probably one of the more pressing factors that motivates people to choose vegetarianism, and this could come from a doctor's recommendation, as I mentioned earlier. So it's not really necessarily a voluntary thing. It may be met with some resistance, but people may choose to focus on a plant-based diet to avoid the fat and cholesterol that's found in some meats. And I should point out that these sort of boilerplate, overly simplistic, anecdotal arguments for vegetarianism, like saying, oh, well, plants are healthier than meat. There are meats out there, like salmon, for example, that has protein, it has omega-3s, and that the salmon industry then monetizes the protection of the environment. So you have these small, family-run, generations-old salmon fishing businesses up in Alaska or something. All these people work together to keep their industry going, and so they become this very active political action committee. So there's that aspect of meat industry, let's say salmon in particular, where if you get rid of the salmon industry and nobody's really dependent on their livelihood for the water to be clean and fresh and to have these salmon swimming around, there's no incentive there, and people will just go off and move to the city and get a job in a cubicle, and the whole salmon fishing industry will be long forgotten. So anyway, I don't want to get off on that tangent, but there are these farming practices and certain approaches to farming that can be beneficial. But back to health. In general, meat as a whole can be problematic for health. But completely removing protein from your diet can also be equally dangerous or maybe more dangerous. So that's where, as I mentioned, these meat alternatives, these imitation meat products, can allow everyone to continue to have the protein intake that we need and have less of an impact on the environment to the extent that meat production harms the environment and not have an adverse impact on their health. So health is the first reason. And people that choose vegetarianism for health reasons may not be charter members, card-carrying members of PETA or, you know, animal rights groups. They just choose plant-based foods for the health reasons. Okay. The second reason is a concern about the environment. And those who are concerned about the environment and eat a plant-based diet for that reason, they may not really think about their health. They might be in good health. Nobody's ever told them their cholesterol's high, but they're choosing to be vegetarian because about their concern about the environment. And they may not even resonate with the concerns about factory farming, or they may not even know about that. It might just be their concern about rainforests getting chopped down to have more grazing land for cattle for McDonald's or something. So the environmental folks. And then there's this category number three of ethics. So there would be people who are looking at the animal-based food industry and having concerns about the ethics of that, of exploiting animals, putting them in cages, killing them, and that they feel that's ethically wrong and that that introduces sort of a bad ethical practice in our society that can have other reverberating impacts. So we become a less compassionate society if we're willing to cage millions of animals and kill them and eat them. That's the ethical argument and concern. And the people that are concerned about the ethics, they might not be that concerned about the environment or their health, but they're really concerned about the ethics. And that could even be more of a head knowledge than it is a gut reaction. Number four is identity. So there are people who like to belong to something and want to have an identity for themselves, and vegetarianism is something that people can do to belong and to have meaning and to be able to say, oh, I am a, and then fill in the blank. And so I'm not saying all vegetarians are that way, but there's some people that are just wanting to have whatever is culturally and societally popular. You know, some Hollywood actor says they're vegetarian, and so now this person wants to have that identity also and to be like somebody famous in that regard. And then number five is experimentation. There are people who will, you know, post a video on YouTube and say, oh, this is what I did for 30 days, I became a vegetarian, or just even if it's not posted on social media, people are just curious about these imitation meat products and vegetarian living vegetarian diet and options. So they're just experimenting and learning. They may not even connect with these other points that I'm making. Number six is sort of, I would say it's about compulsiveness. And there are people who want to, for whatever reason, it kind of grounds them. It helps them to feel like they're in control, to have a compulsive system that they align with and that they identify with. So that compulsive thing might be stamp collecting, and they're a stamp collector. Or could be, you know, gaming, or it could be fantasy football or whatever that starts to kind of consume their life, and they become very passionate about whatever that thing is that they're going to be compulsive about. And so vegetarianism is one of those things, and you'll find people that are very, very, very strict and compulsive vegetarians, and even pushing into veganism, that not always, but sometimes they don't even connect with these other points I'm making about the ethics or the environment or animal well-being or whatever. But it's just about having this system in their life, and they're going to be rigidly following it. And it's almost like religion can be that way. Just people that are super, super strict about their life and having no flexibility. And a little bit of ego in that to sort of demonstrate that they have control over their life and they're following this strict plan. And so, anyway, again, not everybody, but it's just an element out there. There'll be some people like that. And they'll look on a box and see a list of 50 ingredients. And if there's one ingredient in there where 0.01% of the product is some animal-related item, like eggs, for example, and even though animals aren't being killed necessarily to get the eggs, and even if they were farmed in a humane way, it's part of this compulsiveness to say, oh, I'm not having any animal product at all. So anyway, it's understandable. You want to be respectful and thoughtful and understanding of people like that, but it's just something to be aware of. The seventh category is the one that we probably think a lot about when we consider people who are vegetarians, and that is that there are some people, and I mentioned it earlier, who are sort of disgusted with the idea of eating an animal. And it could be mixed in with the ethical aspect of it. They're disgusted with the idea of, you know, killing and eating something. But it's that level of disgust where eating a chicken or a cow or a pig to them is the same as eating a bat or a frog or any other kind of animal you can think of, particularly like a domesticated type of animal. There are people that just find any kind of animal eating to be really disgusting. So with those seven different categories, and some overlapping and some people checking off a few of those boxes, we end up with a really diverse group of people who might be identified as vegetarians. And the people in the first category, the health conscious person, they might even eat meat on occasion if it's a family gathering, or, you know, they're traveling, they're on vacation, and then the only food available is something that's a meat-based product, because they're not really disgusted by meat, and they're not too concerned about the ethics or the environmental impact, and certainly having one steak, they probably feel, isn't going to be a problem. And so within their worldview, they're correct, probably. Anyway, it's helpful to understand all of these different types of vegetarianism in how we understand other people, how we try to respect other people and understand why they do what they do. It's also helpful for anyone thinking about becoming a vegetarian to kind of go through that list and consider what attracts you the most or what's most significant to you. In my life, I've spent decades being a vegetarian, and I've also spent decades being a meat eater. And so I identify with people who make these different food choices. Probably one of the most significant resources that I came into contact with was a video version of a book, Diet for a New America. And I believe it's John Robbins, who is one of the children of the Baskin-Robbins fortune and empire. He was the main host of that video. And in that video, which I think to me seemed like it was more impactful than a book because you could see these animals and the conditions that they were in. In that video, he just stepped through pretty much all of those different categories, the ethical one, the environmental impact, the health. And it was, for me, just like so much information in such a short period of time that was so compelling that I just decided, wow, there's just like no reason to eat meat anymore. I should just start being a vegetarian. So I think that can happen if you're presented with sort of one argument in favor of vegetarianism, you might mull that over and think, I'm not too concerned about my health or whatever. But if you're presented with all of these different arguments and visually you're seeing the impact on the environment, the impact on people's health, doctors talking about the cholesterol and how it's killing people, you know, if you see all of this, then that can be pretty compelling. You know, I live in Iowa City. It's a university community. There are people from all over the world. And we also have Kirkwood Community College here, which also has people from all over the world attending. So it's a very diverse community. And as a result, we have people with all kinds of dietary practices. And so you learn to try to understand more about different people. And I think some vegetarians are in a bit of a bubble, and they're surrounded by their vegetarian friends. In their perspective, probably, you know, 90% of the world thinks the way they do. And so they find it hard to imagine how anyone could live differently. As you're dipping your toes into something like vegetarianism, and you're interacting with people across this whole spectrum that I talked about, you eventually will interact with some kind of almost like militant, cult-like, extremist, angry, self-righteous people who believe this in this cause and that have sort of no understanding of others or compassion for others or whatever. It's just bizarre. But anyway, there are people who just believe like, oh, well, one day the whole world's going to be vegetarian. Now, it might happen for like economic reasons and the world crisis of global warming or something, we might just be moved in that direction. But people generally believe that whatever their cult-like religious fanaticism is, that everyone else, that, well, number one, that it's the best way and that it's the only way, and that everyone else should do what they do and think what they think, and that that's the way the whole world should be. And so that's how they approach things. And if you've ever interacted with someone like that, you'll find that, you know, that can be unpleasant. And those types of people, whether it's through their verbal exchanges or through their direct action events, they tend to turn away more people than they gather. So that's unfortunate. And that's sort of an aspect of vegetarianism and any ism. In general, I think for those approaching vegetarianism for any variety of reasons, it's nice to just kind of share your own experience without being too religious about it and without sort of being self-righteous or condemning. And to remember that there are people that live in places in the world where you're not just going to go out and plant a garden. You have like a herd of goats that are eating little scrubs of weeds or something that grow up between the rocks, and there is like nothing growing there. And so all you have is like, for those cultures, for those places, for where they're living, goat's milk and goat's meat, and that's what they eat. And then there's the ecosystem around us, and we see that in nature, we see this sort of circle of life and predators going after the food that they eat. And so we live in a world where there are lots of animals that are carnivores, and so that is sort of a way of nature. And so it's hard to make an argument that it shouldn't exist at all and that it's unnatural. It obviously is, it's in nature. But anyway, just some of those points are important to make. And if somebody's trying to convince another person to become vegetarian, you know, it's good not to use arguments that are easily deflated. I don't often quote from Bible stories, but there's an interesting story that was recorded in the Bible. And so sometime a few hundred years BC in the Old Testament, there's a story about this guy named Daniel, and he ended up being in the lion's den. You've probably heard that story, Daniel in the lion's den. And there's another story about Daniel and his friends, which when they were basically detained by this leader, they were put in jail or prison or whatever. And there's a record of what they ate. It's very interesting. And so they were eating vegetables. And the reason there was a recording of that is because it's just kind of bizarre, you know, that they were offered meat. Back then, there was no reason not to eat meat. Just eat whatever's given to you. But they specifically requested this, like, vegetarian, or I guess what is described as really almost a vegan diet. And the guards who were watching over them recorded that their belief was that these people were going to die because they weren't eating meat. And they were just having vegetables. And this became a story worthy of recording in the Bible. And what happened was that as the days and weeks went by, Daniel and his friends, it's recorded that they became healthier and healthier and healthier. They were glowing, and that they were even having these sort of intuitive and prophetic-like dreams. So they had this just amazing mental acuity, amazing physical stamina, and eventually what happened was they were set free. But it was just, it's an amazing story, but it's an account of what, at least in that anecdotal one instance, what happened when somebody switched to a vegetarian diet, and it was significant enough that it was recorded in this relatively important book. Depending on who you are, you would agree with that. So it's just kind of interesting, and that would be, I suppose, under the category of health. But, you know, there's some people who feel that when they're on a plant-based diet, that they just feel better, that they think clearer, that they sleep better, that they feel lighter. And so there's another benefit to eating just a more pure and clean diet. When I was growing up, we had LP record players, which are sort of becoming a thing again. And in addition to records that would have music on them, there were records that would have animated stories, sort of narrated stories with sound effects. And one of the records I had, one of the LPs I had, was 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And because these were LP records, they were sort of a condensed version of what might otherwise be a full-length feature film or a long book. But it was fun because of the animated narration and sound effects. So in this 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, one of the points that was brought up was the food that was eaten in this underwater craft, an underwater sort of village. And the captain of the ship apparently was the visionary behind this, which was having food harvested in the ocean that was mostly seaweed and other plant-based ingredients that were harvested under the water. And the guests on this vessel or in this underwater community were able to eat food that tasted just like something they would have recognized from their land-based diet. So it's been interesting to see something that at one point had been almost like science fiction in a story being told on an LP record 40 years ago, that those things could be coming true today in the same way that the Star Trek communicators are now a reality in our world. I appreciate all the listeners who follow these podcasts along. I thank you for listening to this episode, and I look forward to sharing more with you again soon. Take care.